And welcome to Big Yay Energy. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Theora.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters.
And we're here to talk about it.
Cheers, queers. We are back with another super fun interview. Today we're talking to Eden Robinson, who released her memoir, Becoming Shameless, last year. Welcome to the podcast, Eden.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Yes, we're super excited. So as Caitlin mentioned, you just wrote a book recently. So can you tell our audience a little bit about what Becoming Shameless is about?
I wrote it shortly after reading Jeanette McCurdy's memoir, I'm Glad My Mom Died. And so as I was reading it, I remembered a lot of things that had happened growing up. And you know, I'd also at that time, I'd come out about, 6 years previously. And so I was working through internalized homophobia and lesbophobia and all of that. And so all these things were just kind of percolating in my brain. And so, then when I read her memoir, I was like, I relate a lot to these experiences. And there's also this whole like homophobia piece and like coming out later in life, which I feel like isn't talked about enough. More people are talking about that, which is great. But, I was just like, what if I wrote down all my thoughts and experiences, what would that be? And then I wrote it down. I got like the first draft finished within a week and I was like, I think I have a book here. And so then I just kind of learned along the way, about self-publishing and all of that. So, but to answer your question, it's basically about, my experience growing up, surviving an abusive childhood, and navigating that and healing from that. And also unlearning a lot of internalized homophobia and realizing that I'm gay when I was like 27, which is a fun time to realize that, so it's about both of those. And, I wrote about both of those experiences because recognizing that this dynamic I had with my primary parent was really abusive, like recognizing that, and also recognizing that there are all these, societal expectations of me to be a straight woman and how that doesn't align with who I am. Unlearning both of those, unlearning those expectations, and kind of learning how to kind of be like, that's not about me. Let's put that over there. That doesn't need to be a part of my life. That there's some interconnectedness there. So that's what the book is about.
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who can relate to everything you went through growing up. So why did you decide that now was the time to write and release your memoir?
It was more just kind of a like, after reading Jeanette McCurdy's book, I was like, do I have enough for a book? And then I wrote it out. I was like, I think this is enough for a book. And so then I just did it. it wasn't like a, in terms of timing, I do feel like, I reached a point in my healing journey where, I kind of reached a level of stability in both things. So, in terms of my queer identity, I felt comfortable in the lesbian label. It took me time to like even feel comfortable saying the word lesbian out loud. But I was at that place when I wrote the book. I'm still, still happy little lesbian over here.
Happy little lesbian needs to be a shirt.
I hope so. Cause like a lot of the unlearning around lesbophobia specifically is like culturally the word lesbian has such it's very sexualized Like, even the fact that, like, if you go onto Reddit, like, r/lesbians, it's not for us. It is performative. It's performative sexuality targeted towards straight men. You know, and like, even the way, like, if you look at TikTok, like, the fact that the dollar bean, like, the reason that became a popular, like, meme and phrase is because the word lesbian was being restricted as, like, oh, if there's the word lesbian in comments or description, then that's considered more mature content. It's like, I'm not mature content. I'm a person, you know?
Like, gay is fine, but yeah. Lesbian.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And obviously, you know, all the word, like, queer, gay, bisexual, like, all of those words, they describe, you know, community and people and individuals, you know, and they describe, like, those terms apply to teenagers who are, you know, like, there's bisexual teenagers, there are lesbian teenagers. I was one, you know, I just didn't know it, but yeah. I was, you know, like, so it's important for those terms to be, you know, I know that there are some queer individuals who shy away from the word lesbian and don't like to identify with the word lesbian because of how hypersexualized it is. And I totally understand that, totally respect their decision. For me, my personality is such that it's like, hey, I'm that thing. That's like, stop sexualizing that word. That's what, that's me. You know what I mean? I'm not going to shy away from the word. It is me. And so I want to see the culture shift, not people who would otherwise identify as lesbians shy away from the word because of cultural perceptions, you know?
Yeah, I actually love that you brought that up because I do have a question about that. And it's on page 93 where you talk about having a hard time with the word lesbian because of the depiction of that word in the media. And I felt that was super relatable because I also had a hard time with the word lesbian until I started doing this podcast. And it was just common because yeah. It's not common-ish to hear it outside of the community, I feel like, because of the connotation of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gay or queer is much more sort of like commonly used. And I love queer. Like, I love queer as an umbrella term because it's so inclusive and because it's inclusive of people who are like still figuring themselves out because that takes time. But yeah, but I also really love the word lesbian and I'm like, hey, you know, like, and I love all the memes around it. Like, let's go lesbians. And like, there's one, I think it's from like a documentary or something. It's this older woman coming out of the van and she's like, where are my lesbians? And then all the young women just like flock to her and I was like, I love this.
That's from a movie called Pride. It's fantastic. It's like the gaze of lesbians for the minors, and this was like a real thing that happened during like a labor strike in England. And yeah, that's
amazing.
It's amazing.
Okay, I have to watch that.
Go watch that movie. It's great.
Yeah,
but yeah, iconic. Yeah
so obviously we use the word queer to you, but I've had people like the older generation of the LGBTQ community be like, oh, we don't like that word. So I feel like there's still some people who do not prefer that word because of the way they were raised, because that was also used in a derogatory manner.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that also, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, there's power in language, and there's something to be said about, like, taking words back, and, like you're saying, destigmatizing the word that was used, not by the people who identify with it, in a slanderous manner. Like, queer is common now, when it used to be such a, like, a derogatory word, like Caitlin said, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I, in January, my girlfriend and I started a podcast called Just Dyking Around. Because, like, I like the word dyke. I think it's a fun word. I totally understand for people who don't want to use it. I totally understand. My perspective is I think words are worth reclaiming if you want to. And I'm someone who wants to reclaim the word dyke because I think it's a fun word. I think it is fantastic how many ways you can use it, like, alliteratively, if yes. That's a word. You know, I agree. Like, just play around with it. Like, I just think it's a fun word.
Definitely.
So, back to the memoir. So, you said that you basically just, like, filled out your life story in a week, which is admirable. And that tells me something that, like, perhaps it was just, like, ready to come out at that particular time when you sat down to write it. So, because you were writing something that was really focused on yourself, did you learn things about yourself while you were kind of, like, I don't know, like, putting your life on the page?
Yeah, I think what I noticed more is, like, the healing that came with getting it onto the page and also in the review process. So, you know, as I was writing, I was doing my best to, like, describe things, you know, beat by beat as they happened. And then in the reviewing process, I, you know, like, kind of shortened conversations and kind of was like, okay, from a reader's perspective, how do I make this story flow the best, you know? And so I think in doing that, kind of going through both experiences, one where I'm just like, almost like info dumping, you know, all of it. And then in the editing process where I'm looking at it from like more of an objective perspective, because I'm kind of looking at it from like an outsider's perspective to see how the story flows. There's kind of like a recognition, like as I was reading the story as if I was a reader, I was like, I developed a lot more sympathy for my younger self. Cause I think a lot of people who survive very abusive childhoods, especially childhoods where the abuse is predominantly emotional and verbal and not necessarily physical. There is some physical abuse too, but when most of the abuse is emotional and verbal, there's this sense of, you know, well, maybe it wasn't really that bad, and like maybe I'm just making too big of a deal out of this, and like there's a tendency to kind of self blame and to kind of beat up your younger self for what happened. And so in, you know, obviously therapy helped me a lot with that as well. But also, yeah, like reading the story and just kind of, I don't know, I was able to develop more sympathy for my younger self of like, yeah, she was really just trying to survive and trying to get through all of this.
Yeah, that definitely, so that you mentioned kind of like the tendency to be like, well, maybe this was my fault. That definitely came through in the writing, and that felt very like authentic, because that's like a common trauma response to just be like, once you're out of the moment, be like, well, maybe it wasn't so bad, you know, and like, it's fine now, because, you know, you're in a survival mode, basically, and you don't realize it. And so like, reading that from a child's perspective was really interesting, like, especially in the younger years, was like very interesting. And yeah, like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I mean, that's extremely common. Like every abuse survivor I've spoken with, you know, whether that abuse happened in a family relationship, a, you know, romantic partnership, you know, it's part of the abuse cycle, right?
Yes.
There's the abusive episode. And then there's the, like reconciliation, you know, where the abuser, things feel better, and the abuser is nice, and you're like, oh, okay, that wasn't that bad. Like, you know, I shouldn't have said XYZ, or I shouldn't have done whatever. And if I just, you know, if I just tried harder and, you know, was a better daughter or partner or, you know, whatever, then it'll be better next time, you know, and it just keeps happening. And then eventually you're like, wait a minute, this is not, no matter what I do, this keeps happening. So maybe this actually isn't about me at all.
All right. To pivot a little bit. So in the book, you mentioned media quite a bit. Like, you mentioned TV shows and movies that kind of meant something to you at different points of your life. So, just since this is a media-focused podcast, curious how media, like, impacted your life.
Immensely. As you, Ghostbusters on my wall. Yes, there love she is that. In the Holler Court. We have Kate love McKinnon it. In a suit. We have Pink in performing. We have, let's see, I have, I've got G-Flip over here.
Oh, heck
that, yes. That's more recent one. They're just fun. Yes. And so anyway, but yes, media has been, you know, made a massive difference. And I mean, starting with, you know, when I, before I even realized that I was queer, you know, I had just gotten out of an abusive relationship where I had been assaulted. And I hadn't even come to terms with the fact that that had been an assault. I just was kind of in a sort of daze. And I discovered Pink's album Funhouse because it had just come out. And her music gave me permission to feel so many emotions that I hadn't given myself permission to feel because my mother never gave me permission to feel. And so yet having that catharsis through the music and also like I Pink became my special interest for a while. And so I was watching like every interview with her I could find on YouTube. And this is back in like the early days of YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was like, oh my God, she's so smart and she's so thoughtful and she's so funny and she's so like honest and like raw in a way that you don't often see, especially in like celebrity interviews. And so I really looked up to her as like, that's who I want to be as an adult, you know, cause I was 19 at the time. And so, you know, I was still figuring out like who I wanted to be, what kind of person I wanted to be, like how I was going to fit into the world. It's like, oh, like that. I relate to that. And I also see so many values that I like want to embody more. And so hearing through her lyrics how she felt angry and sad and just like the angst and the, you know, just there's just a lot of emotions there that her music was the catalyst for me giving myself permission to feel those emotions and feel those feelings. So yeah, that was, you know, her music was and continues to be just impactful and means a lot to me. And then if it weren't for Kate McKinnon, I might still be closeted, which is really sad to think about, but
go Kate McKinnon.
Yeah, no, truly. Yeah. And specifically if she wasn't out.
Yeah.
So I didn't watch SNL or like I had no idea who she was, but Ghostbusters came out, the female Ghostbusters. And of course, you know, misogynists were mad about it. So I was like, well, I got to give it my money then.
Yes.
And so I went to see the theaters on like the opening weekend. And as soon there's like a scene where Erin Gilbert, you know, confronts Abby and then, you know, kind of stumbles into meeting Gillian Holtzman. And just as soon as Kate McKinnon, because Kate McKinnon plays Jillian, as soon as Kate McKinnon came out, I don't know how to describe it. I was like transfixed by her. I was just like, I can't even explain it. It was something about just how she embodied the character and how she expressed herself. And I related to Gillian Holtzman so much. And so I came home and like no one else, because this is the opening weekend, so no one else I knew had seen the movie yet. And I was like, I need to fangirl about this. And so I went to Tumblr because that's the home of the fangirl.
There you go.
And, and I just followed like every Gillian Holtzman, Kate McKinnon blog I could find. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, like everyone else is queer, sapphic. And also I was learning terms like queer and sapphic. Like I just, you know, prior to that, I was just a really, really strong ally to the community. such a good ally. And, you know, so I was learning these terms that were more open than, you know, gay, lesbian, bi, that's it, you know? And, but I, you know, I had only dated men, like, up till that point. And so I know it sounds ridiculous, but I was like, well, I've dated men, so I can't be gay because I've dated men. And, you know, and so I was just going along, you know, just fangirling over Kate McKinnon and Gillian Holtzman. And that's where I found out that Kate McKinnon herself is a lesbian. And I was like, huh, you know, and I'm watching interviews with her. And it's the same thing as like what happened with Pink, where like, I'm just like, oh my God, she's so funny. And she's so like off the cuff and just like very sweet and very, I just related to how she presented in these interviews. And
not afraid to be herself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And also what I noticed is, you know, she had done all of this, all these interviews with other cast members from Ghostbusters. And especially she and Leslie Jones, they have a very like cuddly dynamic. And I hadn't really like thought about this, like this hadn't really come to the front of my mind until I was seeing Kate McKinnon, a known lesbian, you know, interact in such a platonically but like physically affectionate way with her castmates. And I was like, lesbians can do that? Like lesbians can like be physically affectionate and like a non-sexual, like just, you know, be like cozy with their friends essentially.
Without having them be like, oh, you're coming on to me.
Right. Without it being like, you know, because, like, honestly, prior to that, like, I watched The L Word. And, but that, you know, like, The L Word is, like, my, that was the most I knew about lesbians, basically. Right.
It's a frame of reference, you know, that should not be a frame of reference.
Right. It should not be. I mean, it's no. Fun for what it is, like, you know. But, yes, this should not be your sole reference for what lesbianism is. And, it's a soap opera. Let's call it what it is. Right. It's a soap opera. And so totally. When you have a soap opera, like, it's very, you know, like, anytime two female characters make eye contact with each other, you know that's they're going to fuck within the next exactly. 3 episodes. Like, that, you know. And so it was, you know, it's the way that sex was portrayed, I have many feelings and thoughts about how the sex was portrayed in that show. Because on the one hand, I think it's valuable to show how lesbian sex can work because so many people do not know that. And I don't think that real life lesbians should bear the brunt of that, you know, in terms of being asked, I don't know, in the middle of a freaking Trader Joe's, hey, how do lesbians have sex? Like, I don't, you know, and porn is clearly not doing its job of showing how lesbian sex actually works. So I think that there's a lot of value in creating media and content that, you know, show two women having sex in a more realistic way. Obviously, it's all Hollywood and whatever, but, like, in a more accurate way, while also, you know, showing stories and having it be an interesting, you know, storyline or whatever. It's still not, there's value in the show and what it was for, you know, queer women of the time and all of that, but also not the best reference point for, like, lesbianism. Not the most accurate. Anyway, that's all to say that, you know, seeing Kate McKinnon just exist was just, I was having a lot of epiphanies about what it actually means to be lesbian. And I related to it a lot. I related a lot to how she kind of moves through the world. And then I saw a post, because, you know, I'm just on Tumblr, and at this point, it's all just, like, I'm just following, like, all Kate Holtzman fan blogs, so everyone's gay and sapphic. And so someone reblogs a post about compulsory heterosexuality, and I'm just reading it, because I'm like, oh, what's this? And I'm like, oh, it's me. And so it was like that. It's a very, like, I often compare it to that movie, The Sixth Sense, where you get to the end, you're like, he was dead the whole time. That makes so much sense. Like, I was a lesbian the whole time. That makes so much sense. Of course, yes. My whole life makes sense now. And so it was Kate McKinnon, Gillian Holtzman, and then reading about Comhet and being like, oh, okay. Yeah.
So I feel like I know this answer, but is there a piece of media that's out now that you wish was around when you were growing up?
Gosh, so much. I mean, going back to like kids, more like content directed more towards kids, like She-Ra. I wish She-Ra had been around when I know there was like an older She-Ra, but like the current She-Ra, the Netflix She-Ra.
Yes.
I wish that had been around when I was a kid. I wish, oh God, there's, trying to remember like all, there's been so many, Nimona.
Yes.
Oh. I wish that had been out when I was a kid. There's so many like movies and shows that just show like not as much as there should be, but compared to when I was growing up, like there's a lot more now, you know, showing two girls like liking each other and, you know, that I wish I had known lesbianism was an option and being queer was an option. And also part of that is I did grow up religious. So, you know, I don't know to what degree I would have been allowed to have watched these shows when I was younger, but at least for them to have existed, there would have been a chance at me finding them. And I think not only do I wish those shows had been around, but I also, around the early 2000s is when I was like, you know, around those middle school years. And there was the Britney and Madonna kiss. There was Katy Perry's I Kissed a Girl. Like there was so much. I don't know what I want to call it. Like I hesitate to call it sapphic representation, but it kind of was. Like so much like sapphic representation that was like very intensely male gaze.
Yes.
So it was very much in my experience, it was almost worse than if it had never been like shown at all, because to show, this is what being a queer woman is to be further sexualized by men and, you know, preyed upon by men. It created this like internal like disgusted repulsion versus if I had grown up just like not knowing what gay was at all, I may have been able to like connect the dots and be like, I don't really feel that way about guys. I do kind of feel that way about girls. Like, you know what I mean? Like I may have had more room to like actually recognize my own feelings. Because the representation that was out there was so harmful. It was almost like more harmful than to not have it at all, I think, for me personally.
Yeah, I remember that stuff. And then I forget, what was it, Tattoo also came out too, the fake lesbians.
Yes.
The band of fake lesbians pretending to be lesbians. So yeah, I totally, yeah. It was a weird time. The early 2000s was a weird time. But I like your examples that you gave specifically of Nimona and She-Ra, because it goes back to what you were saying earlier. It was like, those are like age appropriate representations of queerness. Cause like She-Ra is like, they're like young adults. And then like Nimona, there's like a young adult in it, like a child, and then like older adults that are queer. And so it's like, and it's not, the point of it is not the romance or like the sexualization of anybody. It's just like a part of this, just part of the characters, and like it's normalization and presenting it in an age-appropriate way. And I agree. A lot of what I feel what we do on the podcast is, like, healing inner child, because you didn't know any of this as a kid. And so, like, yeah, exactly.
Healing
yeah.
inner child and doing group therapy. That's yes. their podcast.
Yes.
Eden, you mentioned earlier that you have a podcast called Just Dyking Around. Can you explain to us a little bit about your podcast? I would like to learn.
Yeah, so my girlfriend Jackie and I have been together for a couple years. I started falling down, prior to that, I kind of fell down a rabbit hole of like a Reddit React podcast. And I just found them really entertaining. And I would like, you know, listen to these episodes, and then I would talk to Jackie about them. We would talk about the ridiculous stories and, you know, just like, we would have our own full on conversations about it. And I was like, what if we started one? And so that's how that started. I was like with her in December, this past December. And then as soon as I, came back home, cause we're long distance because we're lesbians. So, you know, I came back home and we recorded our first episode, and then I'm working on editing episode 9 now. I had to take a little break because I started a new job and getting settled in and all that. But yeah,
we understand.
So it's, yes, yes. Yeah. But yeah, we predominantly like read Reddit posts. I do my best to find ones that like don't sound completely, you know, creative writing practice. You know what I mean?
Right.
I do my best to find ones that are like sound like feasible, and like they, even if this like, even if that particular one might not be 100% accurate, like we've seen these kinds of situations happen. You know, we know people think like this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, but also like, we'll also discuss like other things. Like if we watch like a queer show together, it's very like queer centric of a podcast, right? So if we watch like a fun queer show, we'll talk about it, or like a queer book or whatever. Like one of our recent episodes, we gave a shout out to like Dating Unlocked, which is a queer show that we really enjoyed. It's Canadian. It's a reality dating show, but it's like done really well. It's really cute. And then there, I recently read a sapphic like romance novella that was really good. It's called Bespoke by L.M. Bennett is the author. So, you know, I read a few excerpts and, like, gave the author a shout-out and all that. So it's basically, like, queer content. If we don't have any, like, we don't have anything to talk about, we'll have picked out Reddit stories and react to those. If we have other things to talk about, like, within the queer genre, we'll talk about that.
That's awesome. We love more queer shows.
Exactly. Yeah. Queer media in general.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think it's so valuable and also just really fun to do. But yeah, I also think it's valuable to just like have queer people just like tell our stories, and you know, because there are still so many people who are scared of the rainbow and scared of the queer community, and you know, I think the more that we get to just like tell our stories and be like, hi, I'm actually not the boogeyman.
Yeah.
You know, we're not the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like we just want to get married and like have a good life and like adopt some pets, you know, yes. Maybe, you know, do some woodworking or something, you know, be gay and happy, but that's about it.
I love it. You currently, I believe, live in San Francisco, which yes. has one of the gayest cities I have ever seen. Thank you, Kiora. Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes.
How does it feel to live in this accepting place after growing up how you did?
It's really, really nice. It's really nice to, you know, my day job is I'm a personal trainer, and most of my clients are queer, which is just really, really nice to have that, like, you'll need to, like, cut all these pauses out, but, like, it's, obviously...
There's something about working with the queer population.
Yeah, right. Like, it... I guess what I'm trying to say is that when... Yeah, okay, so this is what I'm trying to say. When you're queer and you're in any workplace, there is this anxiety that can come up where it's like, how much, you know, will I get fired? Or if it's, you know, a kind of job where you're working one-on-one with clients, you know, like, how much am I compromising my finances by just, like, being honest and being like, you know, when they're like, oh, how was your weekend? You're like, oh, great. My girlfriend and I watched blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? Like, talking about your partner is such a common part of just like everyday interaction between, you know, you and your coworkers, clients, what have you. And so there is this sort of like anxiety that can come up even in a place like San Francisco, you know, like where it's like, you still kind of like hesitate and are like, is, can I come out? You know what I mean? Like, can I say my girlfriend or da da da? And living in San Francisco, I feel very fortunate that, you know, that anxiety is much, much less than it would be if I was living in a more, you know, Republican-minded city. And so the fact that most of my clients are queer is, it just creates a level of comfort with both of us, you know, because both of us have had, you know, with each client, it's like both of us have had negative experiences pertaining to, you know, coming out and all of that. And so it's when we know that the other is queer, it just creates this level of comfort with each other. And like, this is, you know, not to overuse this phrase, but like, this is a safe space, you know, kind of thing. And so I feel very lucky that I can just be honest about my life and not have to worry about, I mean, because I'm a terrible liar. I don't have a good enough memory to lie. So, you know, if I had to, like, if I was working somewhere where, like, I had to, like, catch myself and hide that part of me, it would be very, I don't think I'd last very long.
That's why, so, yeah, I add this podcast as the first thing on my resume. So yeah, it just, yeah.
Exactly. So I've been very lucky that, you know, the gyms that I've worked at are very inclusive and very, just, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to never have personally encountered an issue where, you know, my livelihood is compromised because of my identity.
Yeah, honestly, like, it's it having, like, grown up in the South and now living in a liberal city, like, I completely understand how you feel. It's like a giant weight is lifted, because, like, literally, it's normal, nobody cares.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's
lovely.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, I've thought about returning to Massachusetts just, like, for fun. Like, just to be able to show Jackie, like, this is where I grew up, you know? Have my Boston accent come out all over again. You know, but I do, because I grew up in such a religious community, like, every time I think of, you know, going back home, there's that, like, okay, so, like, do I, like, is... Because, like, in a normal situation, if you're going back to a hometown where, you know, you had a couple friends and who still live there, you're going to naturally be like, oh, hey, I want to grab lunch with them, introduce them to my spouse, etc. But every time I think about returning to Massachusetts, I'm like, I don't know if I will reconnect with, you know, these families that I grew up around, because I know they're religious and I don't know how they're going to respond to me being like, hey, me and my girlfriend, you know, are here. You know, so
yeah. Then you get the people, like, you know, who are straight and use the word girlfriend. So then they still won't think that you're talking about your girlfriend. Right. And then
that's confusing. True, but I think, I mean, yes. But yeah, I don't know. I think that they will, I think it'll be pretty obvious. So yeah, but but yes. But then also, that's also weird. You know what I mean? I personally, I'm staunchly against it. I think straight women should choose enough. Just say best friend. Like, why do you have to say girlfriend?
Yes, why, like, are we gendering only our female friends
in conversation? That's boyfriend,
who's a boy and a friend.
Exactly. So that's, I think that's what it is. If straight women were out here calling all their male friends their boyfriends, I would be like, that's fine.
Right, sure, okay, whatever.
But just don't have a double standard, that's all.
Correct.
Love it.
All right, love it. I agree. All right, you mentioned earlier you're a personal trainer. You, like, guessed all our questions. So you're a personal trainer and you created Fangirl Fitness, which,
yes,
we love that your tagline is unleash your inner superhero, because, like, yes. So why did you start this, and, like, can you explain the concept of this to us?
Yeah, so I did not get into fitness or working out at all until I was in college. And it just, you know, working out became an outlet for a lot of this anxiety and anger and all these feelings, and I could just go for a run and then the feelings would feel better because endorphins. And you know, it was at that time I'm like trying to figure out what I want to do, and I ended up randomly getting a job at a rock climbing gym running, like, the kids programming, and which basically just means, like, you know, if there was, like, a birthday party, I would belay. So the belayer is the person standing on the ground wearing the harness with the rope, like, tied in. And they're the ones basically making sure that the climber is safe.
My wife is a rock climber. I am the belayer.
Exactly. Oh, rock climbing is so lesbian. Yeah.
It is.
anyway. Yeah. No, I mean, like, the jobs that I had, the clothes I wore, like, I was living in a glass closet the entire time. Anyway, so I was belay for kids' birthday parties, and also, like, there was, like, the summer camp, you know, I was in charge of the kids, and, you know. Anyway, so this was, I believe it was a birthday party, and one of the girls was so scared that, like, as soon as we tried to, like, put on the harness, she just started crying. Because, I mean, it's scary, it's, you know, scary. If you're walking in, you're a little, you know, 8-year-old, you know, it's big, these big walls, and you're expected to go all the way to the top. And, I mean, we don't expect them to go all the way to the top, but some parents can be, you know. And she was scared. So then, and I was able to just, like, work with her one-on-one, and just, you know, kind of, like, gently coach her and make her feel really, like, at ease. And in working together, I was able to kind of spark that, that interest and that, like, you know, kind of sense of empowerment rather than fear. And by the end of the 2-hour session, she was climbing halfway up the wall and just, like, you know, look how, you know, getting to the halfway point, being like, look how high I am, you know, kind of thing. And so I was like, oh, I want to do more of this. Like, this is something I like, this feeling. And then there was another time when it was a birthday party and it was all girls. And, you know, in the beginning, you can kind of tell, like, there was a little bit more, not, there wasn't, like, intense clicks, but there was a little bit, you could tell a little bit, you know, clickiness. I mean, these are middle school girls. Like, this is, unfortunately, it's pretty normal. You know, but as we, you know, like, only 2 girls could climb at a time, because there were only 2 belayers, and so the rest of the girls were just sitting and kind of started to cheer on the climbers, and it became more of this, like, full group activity where, like, as each girl went up, you know, they were being cheered on by the entire group, and it was such a lovely, it was just so lovely and wonderful, and I was like, yes, I want to do more of this, you know, and so I was thinking about how I could, you know, help other people feel physically empowered. And I was like, what if I became a trainer? And so I looked into it, and, you know, I looked into getting my certification. I got the textbook, the National Academy of Sports Medicine is the agency I went with. And, you know, got the textbook, studied, took the exam, passed, and that's, you know, once you pass the exam, you're certified. And then just started working with clients, you know, I've worked at, like, various different gyms. And it's, you know, the fact that you're, anytime you're working with clients, you know, it's not a clock in, work 8 hours, clock out. This is the same paycheck I get, you know, every couple weeks. I know what I know how much money I'm making. Like, it's not that. It's very like, it's more like this. And sometimes it's like this. And, you know, so it's hard in that respect. But every time I'm working with a client, I'm teaching a class, because I got also a few years after getting certified, I got my yoga teacher certification. Like, it just, I just really love the work. Like, I just really love helping people and helping them feel empowered and, you know, and connecting with them in such a, you know, it's a very like visceral way. You know what I mean? It's like you come in and a lot of times, yeah, a lot of times my clients use it as sort of like a venting session. You know, they're venting about work and whatever job, you know, and so they get that kind of like, you know, like a opportunity to just like vent and like unleash, but unload all of that. And also they're getting to like release that physically as well. You know, stress, anxiety, all of that stuff. You know, they're given that outlet. You know, and they're also, you know, becoming more empowered as well. You know, every session brings them closer to the point where they can eventually just work out on their own, because I've trained and educated them enough that, you know, they know how to do stuff on their own, you know? So yeah, it's a really fun job, and I really enjoy helping people this way. What was the question? Did I answer your question?
Just what's the concept of Fangirl Fitness?
Oh yeah, yeah. So I came up with that because I am a fangirl at heart. And I also, again, I got certified about like eight-ish years ago. And so, you know, the landscape of the time back then, you know, Jillian Michaels was still very big. Like the whole perspective on fitness was very much like boot camp, drill sergeant kind of. There was starting, like body positivity was like starting to be a thing, but still there was very much this public perception of a trainer being like, you know what I mean? Like a big, scary, yeah. And so I wanted a name that would just like, was a little cheeky. I can tell, but I like, you know, just dyking around. I like having fun. And so, you know, so I wanted something that was like fun and like kind of making fun of myself a little bit. And also reflective of like who I am. And kind of indicating like, hey, it's like, we're gonna have fun. You know what I mean? This isn't, no yelling. We're all cool. And so, yeah. So I was like, oh, fangirl. Cause I'm a fangirl. I'm a nerd. I like connecting with other people, you know, who are also nerds and fangirls and all that. So that's what started that. And I wanted something just like colorful. Like if you go to the website, you see it's very like kind of fun and colorful and playful, and that's what I wanted to kind of communicate through my brand.
It makes it less intimidating.
The whole thing. Yeah, because like, you know, physical fitness is something that we're all, you know, we all deserve. And it's become such, as fitness and health and wellness has become like productized and like, you know what I mean? Like as it's become, it's been turned into this product by capitalism.
Yes.
It's like, there's all of this like shame and, you know, shaming and like just bullshit that's just tacked onto it. And you're just like, that's bullshit. But if you don't know, you don't know that it's bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? And so that's why, like, I see my job as like, I'm as much a teacher as I am like a trainer, you know, because most of my job is just literally teaching, like just teaching my clients, you know, don't worry about this. This is bullshit. This is marketing. This is nonsense. And this is what is actually going to help you, you know, physically become stronger. You know, this is what's going to help your health, you know, and all of that. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for setting the record straight as a healthcare professional. I appreciate that because, yes, there's a lot of garbage out there. So.
And it's fun. I mean, like, funny in, like, a depressing way. How, like, the same bullshit that, like, back in the ye old days of, like, Instagram and YouTube, like, it was there, and then now it's on TikTok. Like, you're seeing it's, like, the same, it's, like, reruns, you know what I mean? It's, like, it's, like, diet culture reruns, but just on TikTok instead of YouTube, you know? Yeah. And it's just, yeah, it's, With that said, I do also see a lot of, you know, like, a lot of other professionals. Like, I love Brianna Jewell on YouTube. She debunks a lot of fitness nonsense. You know, there's other trainers, nutritionists who, you know, have a similar approach to what I, to my approach, you know, and do their best to debunk a lot of that. And I'm really happy to see them have a lot of followers and have a lot of attention. So there's, you know, there's a lot of bullshit, but there's also a lot of people who are working to debunk all that and set the record straight as well.
Well, thank you, Eden. Those are all the questions we have for you. This was truly fascinating. We appreciate getting to know you better and all the facets of your life. Before we close out the episode, do you have any final words or anything you'd like to say to the listeners at home?
Nothing in particular. I mean, just, I'm trying to think, like, I mean, I know it's, you know, cliche, whatever, but I think there's a lot of value in, like trusting, you know, trusting your gut, trusting your intuition, noticing that if you feel yourself being pulled in a certain direction, you know, like years before I became a trainer, when I was in college, I wanted to get my degree in kinesiology. I didn't know why. I didn't know what I would be doing with that, but I wanted to. And it was my mom who convinced me that that would be a waste of time. You know, and so, you know, and same thing, like when I was growing up, like there were these moments where I was like, I knew that this was bullshit. Like, I knew that this was abusive. I knew this was messed up. And I knew that I deserved better than what I was getting in from my parents. And, but then, like, you know, I responded to myself with a lot of shame and being like, oh no, you know, you're da 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 da. And so I think that if I had to give a piece of advice, it'd be like, if you feel yourself pulled in a certain direction and attracted to something, and but you're holding yourself back because you're feeling like this external shaming, this external kind of pushing you away from that, it's something worth investigating. You know, I think anytime you feel yourself pulled towards something, that's something to investigate.
Well, thank you for that. We had great advice. We really appreciate, again, thank you for coming on the podcast. We appreciate getting to know you. And to everyone listening, be sure to check out Becoming Shameless. It is out. It is great. And just biking around for all fun extra queer content that Eden's putting out there. So until next time, everybody, hydrate for lesbian Jesus.
And gay it up all over the place. Bye.
Bye. And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. Thank you for listening. We'd really appreciate it if you downloaded this episode and left us a review, no matter how brief. Your contribution will help us reach a wider audience.
We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all social media platforms at Big Gay Energy Pod, or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com.
Join our Discord server to connect with us and our friends who also love queer media. The link to join is in our episode description below.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store on biggayenergypod.com or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more.
Until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus
and gay it up all over the place.